we turn to Habakkuk, Chabaouk in the Hebrew, which means to embrace this, which means to accept this, to hold on to this, to cling to this, to realize that this is important. Because Shaul, now writing under the name of Paul, wrote in Galatians 2:2, his first letter. Later, through 14 years also, I went up to Jerusalem, along with Barnabas, having taken along also Titus. In other words, he had a posse. I went up, but then downward from uncovering and unveiling revelation, which lays bare, laying down to them the beneficial messenger which I preach among the races, down from my own uniquely and separately, but then to the opinions, presumptions, and suppositions, not somehow perhaps into foolishness and stupidity, without purpose or falsely, I might run, or I ran. So Paul is making an announcement, A, that he has his own disciples, in this case Barnabas and Titus, and he would have more disciples over time. He is also the savior of his own religion. And that he it took him 12 years. Oh, actually, it says 14 years to get up to Jerusalem. Now, imagine you're going to speak about events that took place in Jerusalem. You're going to speak about an individual who fulfilled the most important days of his existence in Jerusalem, but you're going to take 14 years before you go there. And then he says, I had an unveiling revelation, which lays bare about something about Jerusalem when he's going to a place where people had actually witnessed with their own eyes what took place. But no, for him, it had to be a revelation. And then he's talking about the messenger which he preaches, distinguished from a messenger that those in Jerusalem that actually knew Yahusha spoke about. Then he wants to tell us that the presumptions, the suppositions, the opinions of those in Jerusalem. He's talking about Yahusha's actual disciples. He's calling their conclusions, their experience, their actual time with Yahusha and their understanding of him from his own lips. Nothing but opinions, presumptions, and suppositions. And their evaluation of Paul's unique message. That their evaluation. So these are people now that knew the real McCoy, that actually knew Yahusha, that were handpicked by him, that spent 3 years with him, witnessed everything that he said and did over 3 years. That Paul refers to their evaluation of his messenger as nothing but presumptions and suppositions and opinions. And then Paul claims that it was their supposition that perhaps into foolishness and stupidity, without purpose and falsely, I might run or I ran. That's amazing, huh? That Paul's admitting that it was the opinion of those who knew Yahusha best, those that Yahusha had chosen to be his disciples, that Paul was foolish and stupid, that he was running without purpose and falsely. So since there's a reference to running in this prophecy that Yahweh expressed through Chabaouk, I thought we would begin at the beginning of the prophecy and then work our way through chapter 1 and 2 to pick up where we left off. It begins towards you. This is towards you is you speaking of Yahweh. And this is Chabaouk, who has been taken to the future. He's been taken 666 years into the future and is now been enabled to read Paul's first letter, this letter to the Galatians. And he reports to Yahweh, and therefore to us, towards you. There are cruel lies and great injustice, error leading to death and destruction. So you continuously withhold salvation. Lies and injustice are conspicuous to me, and they're related. So he has been and continues to be contentious, taunting and quarrelsome, insulting in a dispute, in hostile opposition, harboring an entirely different perception regarding the proper standard by which God and man are in conflict. And also strife and dissension, even argumentative objections with regard to vindication, this man brings and continuously advocates. So likewise, therefore, based upon this, he consistently incapacitated and genuinely paralyzed the purpose of the Torah, which is the source from which teaching, instruction, direction, and guidance flows. So he did not bring forth the glorious and eternal approach to vindicate by justly resolving disputes. For indeed, wickedness encompasses and guilt abounds, hemming in the hopeful against the righteous and the innocent. So therefore, in this manner, his judgment regarding his ongoing means to vindication is perverted. It's distorted. It's twisted. It's false. For those listening, he's talking about Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament. Witnesses are witness among the Gentiles, observing, considering, and evaluating so as to be astonished and astounded, amazed and surprised that indeed a work will be done in your days that you will not find credible, even when it is written down and he is held accountable. Yeah, Paul's words were written down. He's being held accountable here by God himself. And yet his witness among the Gentiles is truly surprising, astonishing. Rather, look to me, Yahweh is saying. Pay attention to me, Yahweh is stating. Stand upright, established, and be restored against the Chaldeans, which is a synonym for the Babylonians. Christianity is a Babylonian religion. Almost every aspect of Christianity was born and bred in Babylon. Christmas, Easter, Sunday worship, the Trinity, Mary, the Mother of God, Queen of Heaven, a dying and resurrecting God. All of it is Babylonian. The nation of heathens and pagans that is disagreeable and poisonous, senseless. He makes his way to the vast expanse of the world as if it were his inheritance, taking it as a possession. That's what Paul claimed, that the entire world was his. Terrible, dreadful, and intimidating. This from his decision, his plan, his lofty status which he brings forth, advances and spreads. Paul claimed to be not only an apostle, but the apostle. And he was dreadful and intimidating to anybody who would challenge that claim. Then at that time, he will actually go with a new and completely different spirit. That would be the only new and different spirit would be the spirit of Hasatan, the adversary. Exchanging the existing spirit, that would be the set-apart spirit, for a totally dissimilar spirit. Became demon-possessed by his own admission. He will become arrogant, meddling, intoxicating, and alienating. All true of Paul. He is totally guilty and will actually suffer punishment, genuinely enduring recompense for his acknowledged offenses. For this is the influence of his God. Are you not from eternity, an unlimited duration of time, Yahweh, my God, my set-apart one? You cannot die. You cannot be killed, Yahweh. Concerning this judgment you have appointed for him. What's Paul's claim? that God died, and that anybody who believes that he died for them would have eternal life. The crux of Pauline doctrine. That God died. Huh? What this is saying is, God, you're eternal. On an unlimited duration of time, Yahweh. You cannot die. You can't be killed. So this, the whole basis of Christianity is based on a preposterous lie. That God died for your sins. It's not true. It's not even possible. And the rock, you have established to argue against and rebuke him. You have positioned, appointed, and ordained to prove that he is wrong, to chide him, accusing, and judging him. Now, there's two ways you can look at the rock here. Both are true. Yahusha was the rock of our salvation. He argued against and rebuked Paul. He told us that he would, that this person who advocated against the Torah was lowly and littly, which is exactly what Paulos means in Latin. He told us that a wolf, Paulos, by his own admission, was a Benjamite, the wolf. In sheep's clothing, Paul told us that he would pretend to be what he was not in Corinthians. Would lure people away from heaven, from God himself. And that this one who advocated against the Torah would come in his own name, and that people would accept him and in the process reject Yahusha, who came in his father's name. He even told us that there will be someone who comes and says that they have seen him in the wilderness, just as Paul did, and it says, don't follow him. Don't believe him. He's a liar. He would tell us that the false, the wannabe, the pretend apostle in Ephesus was a horrible influence. There's only one person who fits that criterion. That's Paul and his posse, particularly Timothy. Yahusha, the rock of our salvation, chided him, accused him, argued against him. But you know, Yahweh himself, through Yahusha, appointed Shimon Kephesh as the rock. Called him the rock. That's what Kephesh means, rock. Petros in Greek means rock. He appointed the rock to argue against and to rebuke Paul. And he did. So this is an interesting statement, that you have established the rock against him, to rebuke him. And you have positioned, appointed, and ordained to prove that he is wrong, to chide him, accusing and judging him. So, a lot of insights here. First of all, that it is appropriate to judge. You know, this Christian notion, judge not lest you be judged, forget it. God judges. If it's good enough for God, and if it's good enough for the rock, it's appropriate for us. And particularly since Yahweh established the rock to judge him, to chide him, to accuse him, to prove that he is wrong. These are very important things that we ought to do. This, you know, we in the second hour we talked about Christianity being tolerant. Well, that's not God's style. God says, I want you to prove that someone is wrong. I want you to chide them. I want you to accuse them. I want you to judge them. He positions people specifically to do that. You don't tolerate evil. You judge it. You don't accept and embrace evil. You accuse it. You prove that it is wrong. Now, the rock here, it's such a marvelous realization that the rock of our salvation, Yahusha himself declared in his introductory statements and his instruction on the mount, proving, chiding, judging everything that Paul would later say and do, his character, his nature, his letters, his doctrine. And then in his farewell dissertation, where Yahusha is talking at length to the disciples on the Olivet Discourse, right before his fulfillment of Pesach, he then warns them specifically about Paul and said, don't follow him. He's a liar. But beyond the rock of our salvation, proving that he's a liar, that and judging him. We have Yosha specifically appointing Shimon as the rock to judge him. As a matter of fact, the establishment of the rock, what he's talking about, you know, Yosha says, who do you say that I am? And, you know, you're the son of Yahweh, the representative of Yahweh, the one who comes in Yahweh's name. The Masiyah, the one who does the work of Yahweh. And he says, upon this rock, renaming Shimon the rock, I will build Bana, my Mikra. Yeah, he didn't say church. He didn't even say ecclesia. He said Mikra, which was translated into the Greek called out, ecclesia, and then changed by the religious to church. And it is this Mikra that is the basis of our salvation. It is the Mikra, which is what Yahweh has established as the path to salvation, to vindication. It is the Mikra that Shaul, Paul, would assail. And it was Shimon Kephish, who would then, the rock, who would witness Yosha's fulfillment of Pesach, the Mikra, Passover, of Matzah, the Mikra, the called out meeting of unyeasted bread, of Bukurim, the Mikra, which was the firstborn children, the called out meeting for firstborn children, the invitation to be part of the first family. And then he was empowered and enriched with the set-apart spirit, the spirit that Yahweh was saying is important as opposed to the different spirit on Shavuah, the Mikra, which is the promise of the Shabbat of seven. That's when Yahweh established Shimon as the effective witness against Paul, who was opposed to all of these things. Then the prophet Chabaouk says, too flawless and clean are eyes to witness such malignant and displeasing evil, to look upon and consider, to evaluate such grievous and perverse labor. The travail of childbirth is painful and full iniquity. You cannot endure. So Chabaouk was taken to the future so that he could read Paul's letter. And he's saying, my eyes, even my eyes, are way too clean and flawless to witness such malignant and displeasing evil. And he's saying that no one's eyes should witness Paul's letters, and especially yours, Yahweh. You are not and cannot endure the iniquity that is Pauline Christianity. Now we're going to consider how Yahweh concluded the first chapter of this, the most important prophecy ever shared with humankind. When we return to Shattering Myths and consider Chabaouk 1:13 as it leads then into the second chapter of this marvelous and important prophecy. Too flawless and clean are eyes to witness such malignant and displeasing evil. The reason he's mentioned eyes is that Paul's influence on humanity is through his letters, 13 of them, comprising half of the Christian New Testament. To look upon, to consider, and to evaluate such grievous and perverse labor, the travail of childbirth is painful and full of iniquity, and you can't endure it. God's not going to tolerate it. He can't endure it. He won't endure it. There'll be no Christians in heaven. Why would you look at or consider treacherous betrayal that is neither trustworthy nor reliable? Chabaouk is asking a rhetorical question. It's a rhetorical question that Christians need to think about. Why would Yahweh, who is perfect, who has laid down a perfect plan, who has laid down a dependable, trustworthy, reliable plan that he himself not only articulated, but he himself enabled, and that Paul totally condemns everything that Yosha said and did, and now Chabaouk is asking the question, why would you even consider such a treacherous betrayal? one that is neither trustworthy or reliable? And the answer is God won't. He delineated his plan. He enabled his plan. It's in the Torah. Read it. It's conveyed throughout the prophets and Psalms. One plan. He walked the walk. He talked the talk. Paul completely undermines and contradicts everything that Yahweh did. It's treacherous. It's betrayal. What Yahweh shared with us, offered to us, is trustworthy and reliable. What Paul wrote is neither. It says, you are silent and still. Inactive. Neither listening, speaking, nor taking action in devouring the wicked, more righteous than him. It said that really there may not be any wicked individual worse than Paul. Paul may be, and this is the inference here in Chabaouk 1:13, that Chabaouk is the single most despicable person who's ever lived. The least righteous man who ever lived is the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of its New Testament, Paul. And God's saying, you know, that those that are more righteous than Paul, Yahweh is silent on. But he's not silent on this one man. This is the one man, the only man in human history that Yahweh is not silent on. So those that aren't as bad as Paul, Yahweh has nothing to say. I'm not going to tell you anything about Muhammad. If you're stupid enough to believe that Muhammad was Yahweh's messenger, then you're just an idiot. And there's nothing that Yahweh can offer you that's going to be of any benefit. You're just way too stupid for words. And he wouldn't consider them anyway. But if you're a Pauline Christian, you're lugging around a Bible, by your terminology, not Yahweh's, that contains the Yahweh's statements through this prophet. And therefore, you have the opportunity to read what Yahweh had to say about him. Because this one man, and only this man, Yahweh called out to condemn. Now, he certainly condemns Imperial Rome, and he certainly condemns the Roman Catholic Church. And he certainly condemns Babylon and everything that grew out of and is affected by the religious and political militaristic nature of Babylon. But as a lone individual, and all of this condemnation is a singular male individual, Yahweh says, you know, he's not silent here. Neither is he inactive. He's taking a stand. He is declaring his overt animosity to Paul and therefore to Christianity. Something to think about, Christian. The only person that God calls out by name to expressly condemn. Now, there's Esau, he says he hates. But Paul, chapter upon chapter of delineations to expose him, to judge him, to condemn him, to warn people about him. And so Yahweh begins the next chapter by saying, upon my requirements and my responsibilities, I have decided I will literally and continuously stand. Yahweh articulated the way, and he honored his responsibilities in enabling the way. He walked the walk after talking the talk. He's going to stand by his responsibilities. His requirements, there are five requirements for participating in the covenant. They have not changed. And he says, I'm going to literally and continually stand on this forever, which is the notion that there is an Old Testament replaced by a New Testament, and that Christians are somehow under the gospel of grace and they don't have to pay any attention to the Torah, is utter nonsense. This says that Yahweh's requirements and his responsibilities are going to literally and continuously stand. And I will choose to always stand and present myself. I will consistently stand firm, presenting myself upon that which protects and fortifies. This is an affirmation of the previous statement. The thing that protects and fortifies is the covenant. The thing that protects and fortifies is the Torah in which the covenant is presented. The thing which protects and fortifies are the mikre, particularly Pesach, Matzah, Bekonim, and Shavuah. The four Moed Mikre that Yahweh himself enabled and fulfilled. That's where he took his stand, on our behalf, to protect us, to fortify us. All of which Paul speaks against. So then I will be on the lookout in order to see what he will say about me. But then, how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? How is it that people think that God did away with his original plan, the covenant, and the invitations to meet, the mikra, and then came up changing his mind with a plan that required no knowledge of him, no love for him, no appreciation of anything he said and did, a complete rejection of everything that he has shared with us, an utter rejection of his invitations to meet, and a complete new and different attitude, response, and plan. Trashing everything that he had said and done and replacing it with the most nebulous of ideas, faith in the gospel of grace, all because Paul said it was so. And God is saying, are you crazy? Why would you think I'm going to change my thinking? Why do you think I'm going to change my response? I'm not going to change. That would make me a liar. It would make me untrustworthy. You should not trust somebody who is untrustworthy. If he changed, he would be untrustworthy. He'd be unreliable. He would be dishonest. You should not trust somebody who is those things. So if the Christian premise is true, the one whom they are relying on for their new plan is by their very definition of that plan dishonest and incompetent. That would make you a moron to believe Christianity. An absolute idiot. Think it through. What God just said here, he's not about to change his thinking. He's not about to change his attitude, his plan, or his response. And as for a disapproving rebuke of Pauline Christianity, expect it. That's what you're getting right here. That's what he thought of it before it was conceived, and what he thinks of it now that it has been popularized. Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation and then expound upon it and reiterate it using letters upon writing tablets so that by reciting this he might run. That's the reference to running. That by comparing what God said about this man, about Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, to what Paul actually wrote, by comparing these two things, that you might distance yourself from Paul, that you might disassociate from him, that you might run away from him because you recognize that he is running away from God. And that's why this prophecy is being written down, the single most important prophecy ever uttered. That's why we're expounding on this revelation. Still, indeed, this revelation from God is for the Moed, the appointed meeting times. When are the Moed? Well, we're told in the first opening statements of Bereshit in the beginning, Genesis, that the Moed would be fulfilled when the greater light became visible to us on the fourth day. That would be 4,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawal were expelled from the garden. Year 4000 Yah, 33 BC on the Roman Catholic pagan calendars. It's when Yahusha came into Jerusalem, as he was predicted to do, to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bekonim, and Shavuah. all of which were fulfilled on the right day, on the day of the Moed, in year 4000, Yah, just as promised. And so this revelation from God is for that time, because it was at that time that we have the conflict between what Yahweh did through Yahusha and what Paul did to undermine all of that. He says the extended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Just because this is 666 years in the future does not change the fact that everything God is saying about this despicable man is important. It's true. It's reliable. Expect him in this regard. Expect him at the time of the Moed. Expect this evil man who would corrupt and betray Yahweh's teachings, his Torah, his plan of salvation. Expect a treacherous man who would have a new and different plan of salvation, of vindication, that would be wholly in conflict with what Yahweh said that Yahweh would find reprehensible. Expect him in this regard, as indeed he will absolutely come. Yahweh is telling us, pay attention. Please, take notice. This is the henna. It's the letter that's the only letter that's repeated twice in his name. Telling us that those who are part of his family, those who are part of his name, those who will bear his name, that they're standing up, they're looking up, they're reaching up, they're paying attention, they're henna. That's how they got into Yahweh. That's how they became part of who he is. That's why the henna is repeated twice in Yahweh's name. Pay attention, God says. Please, pay attention. Behold, speaking of Paul, a man born as Shaul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, the founder of the Christian religion. He says, pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. He's haughty and arrogant. He's boldly presumptuous and heedless of the truth. His soul, it's not right, nor is it straightforward in him. This is what's really important. There are people who have tried to obfuscate this, the most important prophecy in the whole of the Torah prophets and Psalms, by saying that it's not speaking of Shaul, it's the founder of the Christian religion, even though everything pertains to him. No, it's speaking of Babylon, or it's speaking of Sheol, the place of separation, the place known to the religious as hell. But Babylon doesn't have a soul. A man has a soul. Babylon doesn't have an ego. A man has an ego. Sheol, the place, can't have a soul. It can't have an ego. It can't be Sheol, because Sheol doesn't have a soul. Sheol doesn't have an ego. Babylon doesn't have an ego. Babylon doesn't have a soul. This is a singular man who has a soul, who is named Shaul, Paul. Pay attention. He'll be puffed up with false pride. What is the principal theme that comes through all of Paul's letters? Ego. Paul even says that his ego is so out of control that he had to be demon-possessed by Satan himself to keep it in check. His soul is not right nor straightforward in him because he's demon-possessed, because he's rotten to the core. So then, through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. The antidote for Pauline doctrine is trust and reliance in Yahweh and the plan that Yahweh has articulated. And yet it would be Paul who twice, in two different letters, would misquote this statement to imply that it's by faith that we're vindicated and that the Torah therefore cannot save. It doesn't say that. It's not its implication. But Paul would twist this comment that was in the midst of a condemnation of him to renounce Yahweh's testimony. So then, through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. It's not by believing in somebody who is puffed up with false pride. It's not by placing your faith in something that is, in someone who is arrogant, who is presumptuous and heedless of the truth. It's not by adhering to a religion whose founder soul was not straightforward, who used circular reasoning. It is through trust and reliance. What does trust and reliance require? Can you trust someone you do not know? Of course not. Can you rely on something you do not understand? No. Trust and reliance require knowledge and understanding. Where do you find knowledge and understanding about who God is and what He's offering and how to capitalize upon it? It's only one place, according to Yahweh, His Torah. So it's through trust and reliance on what Yahweh has said, on what He has done, that those who are righteous and vindicated, tzedak, shall live. And yet Paul would say that no one is vindicated by Yahweh's Torah, that it's incapable of saving. In fact, this is what Paul wrote. He said, "But because with regard to the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated by God becomes evident, because those who are vindicated, justified, and righteous out of faith will live." It's not what God said. This miserable, despicable man named Paul, who chose the name Paul, has corrupted more souls, has caused the death of more individuals than anyone who has ever lived. He is the most despicable man in all of human history. He's the one man that Yahweh warned us about. Leave him if you're a Christian.